and welcome to A Bookish Home. I'm Laura Zaro-Kopinski. I'm so excited to share that one of my favorite middle grade authors, Karina Yang Glaser, is here this week to discuss the newest Vanderbeeker book, The Vanderbeekers and the Hidden Garden. This wonderful middle grade series is sure to be a hit with the kids in your life, and the newest book comes out on September 25th. I think you'll really enjoy our conversation. Karina Yang Glaser, welcome to A Bookish Home. I'm so excited to be speaking with you.
Thanks for having me. I'm really excited to talk to you.
Yeah, so congratulations on the new book, The Vanderbeekers and the Hidden Garden. I was such a huge fan of the first book, The Vanderbeekers of 141st Street, and it was such a joy to revisit this family, and I really think kids are going to love it. So it's so exciting.
Thank you. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, so can you tell me a little bit about what initially inspired you to come up with the story of the Vanderbeekers? Was it a moment when the idea came to you, or did it sort of slowly piece together?
I think there were multiple things that inspired me. So I first moved to Harlem when my youngest daughter was born. She was only a few months old when we moved here. And it was a really fun place to raise kids. And I just noticed that people in this neighborhood really loved children and really interacted with them and really welcomed them into their community. And so that was one aspect of what I experienced living here. And I wanted to capture that in the book. And the other one was, so right before I started writing this book, I was sort of just fiddling around with writing and wasn't sure if I wanted to really go all in or not. And then someone told me about a program called National Novel Writing Month, which happens every year in November. And it is a program that encourages anyone, you can be a writer or not a writer, and the program is trying to encourage people to write a full-length novel of 50,000 words in 1 month, the month of November, and it happens every year. And it's an international program. Kids do it, adults do it. So I was sort of playing around with the idea of trying that. And a couple nights before November 1st, I was sleeping, and I woke up, and it came up. I don't know if it was in a dream or I woke up and I just had the first line of the Vanderbeekers, which is now in the second chapter, but it was sort of the first line for me. And so that line and then just the neighborhood and my own experience in it really sort of gave me the momentum to really start digging in and writing about this family.
And that's so inspiring. I've heard about National Novel Writing Month. Did you get a lot of the novel done during that 1 month?
Well, I completed the challenge. So I did write 50,000 words in that 1 month. And it was a great experience because I think sometimes anyone who's writing sometimes just gets stuck and you're just staring at the blank screen. And it can be really scary because you don't know what to do, and you don't know if it's because you're not meant to be a writer or if it's because of something else or you're, you know, thinking about something else. And I think the great thing about National Novel Writing Month is it just has people write, and it could just be stuff that you're just going to delete later, but it's just the process of continuing to write even though you know you're going to delete it later is sort of a powerful thing.
For sure.
And the program also tells you not to delete anything. So even if you wrote a terrible scene that you would be embarrassed for anyone to read, you still keep it in there because you're just trying to make the word count. And I definitely did that a lot when I was going through the program. But I also got to the point where one day I would be sitting down at my computer and not knowing what to write and just thinking, okay, this is going to be another day where, you know, the scene I write is going to be terrible. And then something happens where it ends up being a scene I really like, and it gets incorporated somehow. And those were really important moments for me just to remember that writing is not magic. And it's not something that, you know, like everyone works for it, and it's not something that you're just automatically good at. And so that has helped me with subsequent books as well, to not get stuck and just write and revise later. And that's been really helpful, especially for first drafts.
Right. Well, when you mentioned at the beginning trying to capture your neighborhood, that is one of the things that I think just is so wonderful about the book. The neighborhood is almost like a character, and, you know, I was so happy to sort of escape back into that world again in the second book. And, you know, as you're reading, you just want to be at Castleman's with them, and, mm-hmm. you know, in this one, going in and sitting in the garden under Tilia of the Eternal Spring, and it's just such a wonderful world to go into. And I'm curious if it feels that way when you're writing. I mean, I guess if you're basing it on your neighborhood, you're already sort of there. But does it feel like this great place to be in when you're writing?
It does. I love the brownstone. I love writing about the brownstone. And when I first started introducing those elements of the brownstone interacting with the family in the first book, it felt really right to me, because I just feel like brownstones have so much character. And I don't live in a brownstone myself, but I have some friends that do, and in our neighborhood there are brownstones everywhere, so I always love walking on the streets where there are brownstones and just sort of imagining who lives in there and what their lives are like and how many generations of people have lived in there. And so that for me was really interesting. And also, my father is an architect, so growing up I was always exposed to his sketches and models, and back then, you know, things weren't computerized, you know, like they are now. So he really was very physical when he was building those models and making the plans and doing everything by hand, and markers and pencils and erasers and all that. And now I think it's, you know, a lot of that art is lost because everything is digital now. But mm-hmm. Growing up and watching him do that gave me an appreciation, I think, for architecture. So walking it around anywhere in New York or elsewhere, I really find myself really interested in buildings and how they look and sort of the feel that you get when you walk into a place, and why do some places feel different than other places. I really wanted to capture the brownstone and all its warmth and love through not just the architecture, but the way that little things happen in the brownstone, like it creaks at certain points, and
yeah.
the radiator whistles, and just like
yeah, they're going up on the roof and meeting up there, and then yeah, it's just that all really, really comes through for sure. And the other thing I think is so interesting, and I'm wondering if kids have told you this is part of why they love the book so much. The Vanderbeeker kids, it's an interesting balance. They have these like loving, supportive parents that you don't always see in kids' books. But they also have so much independence, and they're allowed to just really have an old-fashioned childhood in a way. They're having these adventures, and they're kind of left to their own devices, which I love. And I'm just curious if kids have talked about that with you at all, to how they really enjoy that aspect of the series.
You know, I have not gotten a lot of feedback from kids about the freedom that these kids have. So I don't think it is something that is really striking kids as different or abnormally different. I have gotten comments from adults about that.
Right.
Not a lot, but I mm-hmm. think that adults who are connecting with the book, it reminds them of books that they might have read when they were younger, like
yeah.
The Saturdays or All of a Kind Family, where, you know, the kids really do have the run of the city, and it feels like the city really supports them and watches over them, and it's not a scary, intimidating place. It's rather just a place where you live and you can walk down the street and see people you recognize and pet the dogs and
right.
all those things. So,
and the business owners know you and, you know,
right.
help patch you up if you take a spill, which happens to Oliver. And, yeah, it's interesting.
I like writing about that because I sort of feel the same, you know, with my kids when they walk down the street. especially around, like, when people are going to work or coming home from work, and they recognize everyone, and people know them and ask about, you know, specific things about their lives, and it's really beautiful, and I really wanted to show that that happens in urban communities, and I know,
right.
you know, it's happening all over, but I wanted to sort of bring that out a little bit more in children's literature.
Right, and I think no matter where you live, one of the things that struck me was that whole idea of the kids having to find a way to entertain themselves, and it struck me that really, if they weren't sort of allowed to sit with their boredom a little bit, the the whole storyline for the second book wouldn't have even happened. So, so that whole idea of them spending this summer creating a community garden, was that something that, that took you a little while to for you to decide that's where you wanted to take the family next in the story, or how did that sort of come to be?
So that, so after the first book, I wasn't really expecting to write a sequel or to make it into a series. It had sort of lingered in the back of my mind, but when my publisher bought it, my editor didn't specifically say that. So they had bought two books, but my when I spoke to my editor, she wasn't, she asked what I was working on, and it was a different, separate book. And she said, great, I look forward to reading that. And so I just sort of thought that they weren't interested in a sequel, and I was fine with that. And I was working on something else that I was excited about. And then it was probably about half a year later when they asked if I would be willing to do another book. So at that point, I really had to come up with an idea quickly because they wanted the second book to come out pretty quickly after the first book. And I think subconsciously I was thinking about the Vanderbeeker kids and wondering what they would be up to next, even though I wasn't actively writing it. And so what I decided to do was base it on a season. So the first book is set in the winter, and then I was thinking about the next season that I would sort of bring them to, and I didn't want it to be, like, right after, so I didn't want to do spring right after, so I thought maybe I would give them, like, half a year, and then I would start again with a summer story, and I didn't want to write about school, so I really just wanted to focus on them as a family unit, so so that's why I decided on summer. And then in our neighborhood, there are tons of empty lots that are sort of overgrown and boarded up. And in New York in general, there are a lot of these small community gardens on these empty lots. And I've read a lot of articles, news articles about how people have transformed them into community gardens. And at different points as neighborhoods become more appealing for development, that a lot of these community gardens are threatened. So that sort of got me thinking about that lot that was empty next to the church that was brought up a little bit in book one, but I never expounded on it because it was winter. And then, yeah, so that sort of was what sort of led to the idea of the summer story and the gardening. And in our building, when we first moved here, I really wanted to garden with my kids. And so we started a gardening program in our courtyard. So we live in a big building with about 80 units. So we got other people to join us, and we had the co-op board in our building by these big planters for the back and different shareholders or neighbors, they would sort of adopt a planter and grow what they wanted into it. And so that was really fun, and it was a great learning experience for us because we were just beginner gardeners. And now, 8 years later, our courtyard is filled with plants. Like, people are growing vegetables and flowers, and it's really beautiful. And we also have garden in the front of our building. We have a couple of planters out there, and that's been really fun too. So,
that's awesome.
Yeah, I wanted to bring in that a little bit into the story as well.
Yeah, well, that project, it created a really nice way to get to know the siblings and their dynamics even more. And they just feel so realistic and also like such individuals. It's nice that they all sort of have their own thing, but they're not types. Like even Oliver, I was noticing, I loved all the book references, and at one point he's counting the books on his bookshelf to fall asleep, but mm-hmm. you know, he also is going off playing basketball all the time, and they just feel like kids that I know. Mm-hmm. And I was sort of curious about how sort of the inspiration behind some of those characters, and if it was a difficult process to make them so kind of complex and realistic.
Mm-hmm. So definitely it took a while for me to really get to know them. I haven't read my very first draft of The Vanderbeekers of 141st Street in so long, but I'm sure that I would be horrified if I read it now, because it does take time to sort of develop those characters, and because there were so many, and I remember when I was first writing it and getting feedback from different friends who were reading it for me and giving me their thoughts, that one of the things that I needed to work on was making all the kids very distinct so that readers right away in the first couple of pages could really get a feel of who these characters were and not be confused, like, who's that person again? And mm-hmm. is that the youngest one? Or, you know, and not. So I really wanted readers not to be put off by the large family, and I really wanted them to get to know the characters right off the bat, which is why in the beginning I was really careful to link either an object or an animal with each kid, just so they were just grounded in that one thing. So for Issa, it was the violin, and for Oliver, it was his basketball or a book, and Lainey was always with her rabbit.
Mm-hmm.
And so those type of things, just to connect a reader to their interest or to something that would just be a reminder. So when Hyacinth appears again and she's with her dog Franz,
mm-hmm. you and her knitting.
And her knitting, yeah, yep. You just automatically sort of know what kind of person she was, and you could ground yourself in that character in that way. So it did take a while to build them up. And yeah, but I think that's just the process of writing and rewriting and revising and building those layers in. And mm-hmm. it's really fun. It's really fun to get to know them more. And I think now as they're growing up, like, they're changing too. And I'm seeing that with my own kids who are 8 and 10. And just, you know, every month something new is coming up. And I wanted to be respectful of that in the story I was writing as well.
Yeah, I can definitely relate to that. I have a daughter who's a year and a half, and it's true. Every single month there's something new, and they learn something new, and it's a whole different ballgame. So
right. Especially when they're young, they really just change so rapidly.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that was so fun as a reader is seeing all of the different children's book references, and the kids really seem like a well-read bunch. There's Roald Dahl and Mandy, The Secret Garden, Anne of Green Gables, Harry Potter. And I was curious if those or other books were some of the books that really mattered to you as a child, or which ones really stick out in your mind as books that helped make you a reader.
Mm-hmm. So when I was growing up, I loved to read. I was the kid who stayed up late with the flashlight under the covers and, like, would always be, like, nervous that my, you know, mom would come in and catch me. I would, like, read when I was eating a meal, like, with the book in my lap. And so I was that kid, and my kids are exactly the same. So it, but I think when I became a parent, I think that was, like, the most exciting thing for me is to introduce them to books, because for me they were so important, and I wanted them to really be able to turn to books for just adventure and comfort and inspiration, and because that's what books were to me and still are to me. So that is, yeah, so the books I mentioned in the book, and the Vanderbeekers, are all books that I've loved I think, obviously, Anne of Green Gables, I just love that whole series.
Mm-hmm.
And
I named my daughter after her, so I can
Did
relate
really?
To that fully. Yeah, I actually just interviewed the author of a new, well, newish
oh,
Anne of
right.
Green Gables biography, House of Dreams. And
yeah,
that
book.
Yeah, it's so wonderful. But yeah, I can totally relate to that whole idea of wanting to pass that love on to your kids. And I read on your website that one of your proudest achievements now as a mom is having kids that can't go anywhere without a book, which I loved. And I guess in addition to sort of introducing them to some of the books that you loved, how have you approached like raising readers? What have you been thinking about in terms of that?
So for me, we started reading to my older daughter when she was still in my womb. So we would read like picture books to her because we were just so excited for her to
mm-hmm.
come and like meet her, and we wanted her to love books. And for my baby shower, everyone brought a book for her library, and it wrote little messages in there. So for us, for my husband and I, that was very important. And so reading out loud to them, I think, has really been the thing that has helped them really love reading. And even though they're older now, 8 and 10, and they've been independent readers for years now, we still read out loud to them. I still read out loud picture books to them. And for me, it didn't seem strange, but when I talk to other friends who have kids the same age, they're always a little surprised that I would still read a picture book to my kids or that I still read out loud to them. And I always encourage them, like, you should try it too, because even though they're independent readers, like, it's still, like, a special time to
For sure.
read out loud and to share that experience and to know what they're liking and not liking, and that helps us as parents understand what kind of books, you know, our kids like and are connecting to, and it brings up conversations that maybe wouldn't have come up otherwise. And so I really love those moments. And also, I think reading out loud, like at the end of the day, like before they're, you know, as they're going to sleep, it also helps reset us, you know, like if we've
mm-hmm.
had a hard day together, or, you know, things didn't, you know, we've all had those days where we come home and eat dinner, we're like, when is this day going to be over?
Yep.
And it's nice to just end by reading out loud and just enjoying that time together and just remembering that things are going to be okay and we're going to read the story and we're going to talk about the story or not and just enjoy being with each other. And so I think it's been really great for us. And then, you know, for me, because I also review books, I get so many books every day that come right to my house. And so those books are just coming right from publishers. And my kids are so spoiled that they have that all the time. And they just, like, go through my books like it's theirs. And that's really wonderful, too, just to give them so much access to different types of books. And I think that is also really important, too, because then they're getting exposed to all sorts of books, graphic novels, nonfiction, fiction, picture books, middle grade books, and I think all that has contributed to them being readers.
Well, that's very encouraging. Those are, you know, I only have the toddler now, but I'd say those are the two big things that I'm really passionate about, just sharing those family read aloud moments, and then the access that you're talking about, just having piles of books all over the house. And you know, a lot of them are from the library, so
mm-hmm. yeah.
you know, you can get them for free. But I just think that's so important. And I'm an elementary school librarian, so I had been thinking about all of this so much as from sort of the teacher standpoint, and
mm-hmm.
it is a little different thinking about it as a parent. But that's part of why I started the blog and have really been thinking about that whole idea of instilling that love from a parent
perspective. And what's nice, sounds like you're in this boat as well, you know, if you're someone who loves reading yourself, then it's certainly not a chore to be reading out loud. It's moments that, you know, I look forward to, and it's just such a nice experience to have. And so that's great. But you mentioned your work reviewing books. Could you talk about your role a little bit at Book Riot?
Sure. So Book Riot is the largest book media company in North America, and they started out with a website and people, different contributors writing in about being readers, about book recommendations. And when I joined, I think I joined 4 or 5 years ago, and I really focused on middle grade books because that was sort of my passion and the books that I loved growing up and the books that I really thought were really important to me becoming a reader. So I started writing a lot about middle grade books and picture books. And then after a few years, the Book Riot editors were thinking about doing a newsletter for just children's books. So they asked me to write them, and it started out being once a week, but this summer it went to twice a week. And so basically what I do is try to provide resources and book lists and new release information for anyone who subscribes to the newsletter. And it's really fun because I feel like it's a way for me to get an understanding of what books are coming out and just different themes that I'm seeing pop up. And just for me, it's a joy because I love reading. I love seeing all these beautiful books come out, and it's fun to give them exposure. So generally, on Sundays, I write about like a themed book list, or sometimes I'll do an interview with an author or some kind of just like a special feature. And then I just talk about different news that might be going on in the kidlit world and different articles that readers might be interested in taking a look at. And then I also talk about any books that I'm reading at that point. And then on Tuesdays, which is generally when new books are released, I'll give a list of all the books that I know of that are coming out that day, and sort of like a little synopsis about them. And then I also try to recommend backlist book recommendations. So backlist books are books that have come out over a year ago. So it could be books that came out a year ago or, you know, 80 years ago. So
right.
I always try to do that as well. And
yeah, I definitely, I recommend that I subscribe. I got the newsletter this morning.
Great.
I'll definitely link to that in the show notes. And I loved, in this one, you recommended one of my favorite picture books in your backlist section, The Library by Sarah Stewart. I've read that out loud to classes, and such a good one. And I saw that new Jacqueline Woodson Harbor Me book is coming out. So yeah, that's great. I definitely recommend people checking that out as well. I was curious what it's been like for you to go from, you know, profiling these different books and reviewing all this wonderful kidlit to then now having your own sort of beloved children's book out there in the world, and now a second coming out. What has that been like for you?
It has been wonderful. I feel very lucky to have myself surrounded by books and to be writing, and it's been really great, and it's also been challenging.
That was going to be my other question, just how you schedule it all and find the writing time for your own books.
It's definitely a juggling act, and, you know, anyone with kids knows that, like, having a job and then caring for kids, or when my kids were born, I was staying at home with them full time, and that in itself is also a challenge as well.
Yeah.
So I think being a mom is you know, its own particular challenge in terms of juggling all the things we have to keep track of. And now, you know, it's a lot easier for me because my kids are both in elementary school. And so I have that chunk of time when they're in school to work. And then I have a very strict boundary. So when I go to pick them up, you know, that's my day, like when they leave in the morning and then when I get home. And I think a lot of children's book authors are in the same boat as I am, because I know a lot of us are, you know, the full-time caretaker as well as, you know, having our career. So I think it's pretty universal among us that, you know, our kids are in school and we work and then we spend time with them and feed them dinner and put them to bed and then we work again. And
yep.
So, and I think, and it works great. And I'm lucky, I feel lucky that I have that flexibility so that, you know, when they're sick or when, you know, there's a special event at their school, that I can still do that and also have a job that is fulfilling and is exciting to me. So it's definitely a juggle, and I think it's getting more challenging now just because things are getting busier and I'm having to think more about how to sort of coordinate each day and talking to other moms, and especially like older moms who have kids that are in college or graduated. I find that really valuable to talk to them and sort of
that perspective.
Right, like how to manage life as kids are getting older, and yeah, so, but it's been great. I feel very lucky.
Do you find it tricky at all sort of going back and forth between the reviewing writing mentality and then writing your own books? Do you like do one on one day and another on another day, or how do you sort of structure that?
Well, it depends. So usually I try to do a lot of my book write at work on the weekends, and that frees me up during the week when I really just need complete quiet to write, or I just need like that dedicated space to just know that, you know, for these days I'm just writing. So I like having both because it gives me different things to focus on. So I'm not always just writing, which can be really, it can be exhausting and stressful just to be writing all the time. So I like having something else to sort of think about, and I love sharing about other people's books. And so that is really fun for me. So yeah, so generally if I'm doing a revision or I'm drafting, I really need to have specific time for that. So then I sort of rearrange my schedule so that I can do the book write stuff on the weekends and then have the week when the kids are in school to just write and focus on that.
Yeah. Right. Well, I guess a last thing would be, you do so much reading for Book Riot and I'm sure just on your own. Is there a particular title, either children's, or I don't know if you read adult at all too, that counts as well, that you've been reading lately that you are excited about that you'd want to recommend?
So I have so many books that I really loved lately. So I did actually read an adult book last week because I had turned in my revision for the third Vanderbeekers book.
There's going to be a third.
Yes, there is a third. It'll be out hopefully next fall.
Oh, exciting.
So then I turned in that revision. So I rewarded myself by reading a book that wasn't a kid's book. And it was called Next Year in Havana. And by
I've heard of that. Yeah,
it's set in Cuba, and the whole thing is set in Cuba, and I found it really interesting because I didn't really know a lot about Cuba, and I felt like I learned, it's a fiction book, but I felt like I got to know a lot about the setting of Cuba there. But so I read that book, and then there are a bunch of children's books that I've been reading, and I was going through the new releases for next Tuesday this morning. And there's this really adorable picture book called Business Pig by Andrea Zuiel. I'm probably saying her name wrong. Z-U-I-L-L. and I thought it was really sweet and cute, and the illustrations were really fun.
Oh, that's wonderful. I'll definitely link to both of those if people are interested. Yeah. Well, congratulations again on the book, and
Thank you. I also
have to say I'm excited. I saw that there may be a Vanderbeeker movie that Amy Poehler bought the rights to the movie.
Yeah, so her production company optioned the rights to the movie, so that was very surreal and awesome because I'm a huge fan of her. So
yeah,
that is very cool, and hopefully, I'm not really sure what's going to happen, but I know that she was really excited about it, and I love the way that she was imagining it when she was talking to me, so I'm really excited.
Well, that's really exciting, and so we'll definitely look out for that, and I'm also so happy that we have a third Vanderbeeker's book to look forward to, so there's lots of exciting things in the works. That's great. Well, thank you again for speaking with me.
Thank you for having me. It was really nice to talk to you, and thanks for your great questions.
The Vanderbeekers and the Hidden Garden comes out on Tuesday, September 25th, so get your library holds and bookstore orders ready. To learn more about Karina Yang Glaser, you can visit her website, karinaglaser.com. And for links to Karina's Book Riot newsletters, Novel Writing Month, and all the books mentioned on this episode, you can check out the show notes on my blog, abookishhome.com. To stay up to date on bookish happenings, follow me on Twitter, @abookishhome. And if you're enjoying the podcast, it would be so helpful if you could tell a friend, share a link to this episode on social media, or rate and review A Bookish Home in iTunes to help others find the show. And don't forget to subscribe to make sure you never miss an episode. Thanks for listening, and happy reading!